Accession number 4473, reel 3.
Colonel Bryce, reel 3. And, sir, how long did this work for the BBC go on?
Roughly about 6 weeks. Every day for 6 weeks.
And were they satisfied with the results, do you know? Did you get any feedback?
We never got any feedback at all. We had to, when we finished with all these reports, we had to record them, obviously. If I remember rightly, we used to have a certain amount of graphs which we had to do, which we used to send into them.
Certain amount of what?
Graphs. You know, you so much this and so much that, and the curve for the thing. But that went on for about 6 weeks. We did get a letter of thanks, as I remember it, but that was about all. And I think they did make us a grant. I've heard they made us a grant, but it was so small in the amount that it was used for the welfare services, as opposed to being dished out individually to the operators who took part in the exercise.
Can you tell me in more detail about the trip that you made, the reconnaissance trip that you made down the Nile Valley? Can you tell me what the purpose of that was?
Well, I don't really know, but as I say, I thought that the we understood at that particular time that this was purely and simply carrying out a reconnaissance, and we were tied up. We used to meet civilian people. We didn't personally, but the officer used to meet civilian people. And we rather got the impression that they were going down there to check up availability of stores, depots, like oil depots and things like that, in the event of war breaking out in which they were involved. And that's all that we could sort of see from this particular exercise.
So why was the wireless unit necessary?
Keep in touch back with headquarters. We went along purely and simply as a wireless link with this particular squadron who was doing this particular reconnaissance. One interesting thing, incidentally, about this particular reconnaissance, they had what they called a Rolls-Royce chassis. The 12 Lancers were armed with Rolls-Royce armored cars. And this particular chassis, which was the bonnet and the body without all the armoring on, used purely and simply as a sort of sales wagon, had a plaque on it commemorating the fact that it was used by Winston Churchill in the First World War at Antwerp in 1914 sometime. Anyway, that's all we thought it was. And as far as we were concerned, we just moved from town to town, and we normally stopped at a police station. So all we saw was a lot of sand and desert, because at that particular, as you go down the Nile at that time, the cultivation narrowed, and you were driving more or less through desert most of the time. So there were very, very little really and truly of interest, except for the fact we did stop at Luxor. We made a 2-day stop at Luxor to carry out maintenance of the armored cars, the normal sort of standard maintenance you do as a sort of running precaution to make sure that they would be able to cover the next stage of the journey without any faults occurring.
Were you staying the night at the police stations?
Most of the police stations out there got a compound. And we used to go in the police compound. And we used to set up our little... We never used to sleep in any buildings or anything like that. We used to set up our little camp affair. Normally, what we used to do, with my particular detachment, who was on the exercise, we used to use a tarpaulin, lay the tarpaulin down, make up your beds with blankets, etc., on this part, and then turn the top one over to act as protection against the weather and to keep you warm. And used to cook our own meals. They had a cookhouse staff with them, and they had regimental cooks, and they used to cook their own meals. So we were independent of the police, other than we used the police station compound in which to set up camp. And then Luxor, we camped outside the big Turkish hospital there on the sort of Maidan outside, which is a plain. And the same thing applied. We just made our camp and set it up as we wanted it.
Were there any other special pieces of work that you did in Egypt?
Not really. at that particular time, we accepted it as all being sort of standard work. We used to go out on these exercises, I suppose you call them, the wireless exercises. We used to go out in the desert. We used to go out and visit places in the desert. But as far as we were concerned, they were purely part of our everyday work. We never knew if there was any sort of particular object behind them. Because, of course, I was only a signal corporal then, Lance Corporal and Corporal, so I wouldn't be involved in the higher-up thinking. All I knew was appearance, I was an operator and had to work it. Some of our vehicles had went out into the desert, with one of our signal officers called Bagnold, who was one of the instigators of the long-range desert patrol in the Second World War. He and other officers were like mine, used to do quite a lot of expeditions into the desert, finding out things about the desert and getting to know it. It was a story that they were looking for the lost oasis, whatever that is. But we used to send a van out with them. I never went on one of those exercises. But the van would go out with them, a wireless van, and keep in communication in the event of any emergency. But of course, they'd go so far out in the desert, they would set up the base, and then these officers would go away in their own particular vehicles and do their own particular thing. And again, we'd only involve purely keeping communication. That's all.
I think that you were using Manpack wireless batteries at one
point. That's when I was in Eastwood Signals. I left the 12th Lancers on December 32, and I was actually going across on promotion from Lance Corporal to Corporal, and there was no vacancies in the squadron in which I was then, or the unit I was in then. So I had to go across to Egypt Signals, and my posting coincided with the postings coming out from England. So we'd all sort of go together. Well, when I was in that particular unit, one of my jobs, again a detachment commander, but with a PAC wireless set, which is called the AXET.
What set?
AXET. A. We should say AC. In the old Morse code phonetic alphabet, we used to say AX. We used to call it the AX set. And it used to consist of four loads. The receiver with associated gear, the transmitter generator, and two large batteries, like a car battery thing. And of course all the various paraphernalia like radio and all that sort of business. And that was for use with an infantry brigade signal section. And again, we had five of these, one with each particular battalion in the infantry brigade, or company in the battalion. And we used to go out with the infantry then, just pure and simple, again, to provide communications between the companies and the regimental headquarters.
How effective were these Manpack batteries?
Well, they were quite good. The use of lasers, we used to two use of lasers in exercise. They last for about 48 hours, quite happily. And facilities were available to recharge them as and when you want them. Because you had your B-Echelon come along, it would provide you with recharge batteries. So once your battery ran down, you get a replacement, quite happily. But as far as we were concerned in the field, we just issued with these two batteries, which was part of the wireless set, took it into the field, and used it until it ran out. Which, as I say, was quite about 48, 50 hours, which would cover you for quite a long period of passing of messages.
Did you have fixed wireless stations in Egypt?
Yes, we had a network set up, the controlling station being at a place called Polygon, which was just outside Abyssinia. And they had outstations at Mawaska, Alexandria, Portside, in which they used to keep communication. And in addition to that, we used to pass signals back to London, Troopers London, when we used to give casualty reports. And on the odd occasion again, when the Mediterranean Fleet was in that particular area, we used to communicate with the flagship of the Med Fleet. The wireless sets were linked up again. Polygon was linked up to the Cairo Brigade headquarters and the Army headquarters in Cairo with a landline system.
A what line?
A landline system, i.e., which in those days was sounder. And incidentally, the wireless sets we used were very, very old-fashioned ones. They were First World War wireless sets, which was called a 120-watt set. And to operate this set, you had to have a large aerial, about 48-foot mast, which was quite a problem to put up in a sort of limited space. I'm trying to think of anything else about that at the present moment. Oh, we also, at that particular time, a great deal of interest was being shown in shortwave. And several of our my compatriots at that particular time were very keen on shortwave, and they built their own shortwave set, with which they got in communication with other amateurs throughout the world. And the same thing had happened in various other stations manned by signals. Pekin, Jabalpur had also got sets, shortwave sets, and they also got shortwave sets in Aldershot. So this shortwave network, which was purely and simply private, eventually became a sort of unofficial army network.
Did the army actually use it sometimes?
Well, we used to use it. We used to pass traffic, and on the odd occasion, we couldn't get Aldershot direct. They used to get shortwave was in its infancy then, and aerials and all that sort of business were very crude, very little was understood about them, and on occasions, due to sort of heaviside layer conditions and climatic conditions, we couldn't work direct to Aldershot. But at the same time we couldn't work direct to Aldershot, we'd find that Aldershot would be working Jabalpur, and we were working Jabalpur, so we used to pass our traffic to Jabalpur, and Jabalpur used to pass it to Aldershot. And on other nights we might be able to we couldn't raise either of those two, but we could raise the other station in Hong Kong, and we'd pass traffic by them. But this is purely a semi-unofficial network, but they used to use it for passing traffic. Can't think of anything else on that. This fixed communication also, we had a link with landline link with the RAF headquarters so as to we could take some of their traffic, they could take some of our traffic and work that way. And on a Sunday morning we used to open up a standby wireless link to Britcom in Khartoum.
To where?
Khartoum, Britcom. You used to call it Britcom, B-R-I-T-C-O-M.
What did it stand for?
British Command, I should think. And this was quite an exercise in the Heath Robinson. This was an 8-kilowatt job, and it had been either captured from the Turks or the Germans in the First World War. And its power supply source was Mercury Arc rectifiers, which you had to tilt and splash the mercury up, press a key at the same time, so as you get a charge across it and strike it. And the whole thing about this set also was a fact that when we opened up and started going on the air trying to raise Britcom, every wireless station operating in our area used to be blotted out. And all our telephones used to ring. All these stations would ring up complaining. This used to happen around about 8 o'clock, from 8 till 12 on the Sunday, every week. And we used to have to bring on all our staff so as to man the telephones and answer all these people complaining about this particular, because it gave out such a colossal local radiation. So anybody at all in our area, Army, Navy, Air Force, were all plotted out. I mean, just imagine their reaction, can't you?
They knew it was you.
Oh yes, they knew it was us. They knew it was us. This was purely and simply a standby thing, and they used to test it once a week.
Did you ever fall sick whilst you were in Egypt?
I had ear trouble. That was purely and simply by being kicked in behind the ear when playing polo, a water polo. I can't remember. I don't think I was sick at all. The only thing I ever went sick with was injuries from sport. I never was sick in anything else. In fact, taken by and large, the amount of sickness was very, very slight amongst the troops. We had several cases of spinal meningitis when I was there. I don't know how true it was, but this was put down to infection in the water, the swimming baths. Because there was a swimming bath you'd use at Heliopolis. There was also one we used to use in Cairo. But I can't remember. But we had one particular case when, for some unearthly reason, people started dropping down right and left like flies. Just collapsing. And they never found out what caused it. And I was one of the few people. There was about 8 or 9 of us who weren't affected by this particular thing. So we kept wheeling people away until eventually it was only about a very small sort of skeleton staff running the unit. But they were only sick for a short period of time. They'd probably be in hospital about 3 or 4 days. Back they come again. And we were wheeled along to the medical inspection room. And sent down the hospital for tests to find out why we were immune to this particular thing. They didn't even know what it was, as far as I understand. And very funny, really. We were arguing. We used to drink quite a lot of beer in those days. Used to go to the canteen at night. All the corporals go to the corporals' mess and get down and really have a few, about 8 or 9 beers. And in the final event, after they've been talking to us and chatting to us and testing us and all this, they said, oh, it must be purely simply because you're heavy beer drinkers. And so it happened. But I never suffered too much. I can't remember many people suffering.
Was there good medical attention in Egypt?
Well, Army then, I suppose you'd call it good, really. But you must remember this, that these medical officers had a lot to put up with because there was a lot of scroungers, a lot of people who decided that they didn't want to go on a church parade or they didn't want to go on this parade, and they'd go sick.
Malingering.
Yeah, so the town as it was, I should think the first reaction was to treat most people as being sick, swinging it, not sick at all. So that would be their immediate reaction. They'd immediately start looking for somebody who, as you say, were malingering, rather than look for somebody who was sick. In any case, it took a major operation to go sick, because you had to report to the orderly corporal in the morning, give your name in, that you're going on sick parade, then you had to parade with your small kid at a certain specified time, march to the medical inspection room, and then hang about to see the doctor. So it was quite a major operation going sick.
Do you think it was done deliberately?
Well, it was just the way the army was organised at that particular time. I mean, now I understand you're only going to see a doctor, you're going to see him, but in those days you couldn't. So this is what happened. And I always found the medical... Then I never went unless I was some injury or other. I never went to see a medical officer unless I was really sick. And I found it quite adequate. And I was in the Cairo Military Hospital with ear trouble. I wasn't too pleased with the treatment I got there.
Why not?
Well, I went in with one bad ear and came out with two. They used to sort of clean out the ears, you know. It was caused by puncturing. My ear was perforated through this polo thing. I've only one bad ear, and in the end, to all intents and purposes, I discharged myself, said I'm all right, I'm going through the business. I was only a quarter at the time, but the reason for this was because the way I was being treated. The treatment, in my opinion, was bad because they were, not because of the fact that it was young nurses, I should say, and they're pushing this cotton wool on the stick with some sort of cleaning stuff on it into my ear, and they were perforating the eardrums and causing trouble with them. So I went out and left it to them. But while I was in there, I should say the treatment was pretty good.
Were the nurses British girls?
Yes, oh yes, yes. British Queen Alexandra's Military Nursing Service. They were British.
How long was your tour of service in Egypt?
How long was what?
Your tour of service.
I did exactly 3 years. I went out in on 30, November 30. I was 2 years with the 12th Lancers, and I moved across to Egypt Signals in December 32, and I came home in December 33. And the reason I came home was because I was promoted corporal-wise with Egypt Signals, and that immediately made me a possible contender for the formal signals course. Inasmuch as I was fully qualified trade-wise, I had my class one trade rating, and I also had my class one certificate of education, which made me eligible to sit the examination for formal signals, which I did. I was lucky enough to pass it, and I came home on the course which started in January 1934. So I spent 3 years in Egypt.
How long was the normal tour of duty?
5 years. In fact, if you look in my paybook, you'll find that I still did 5 years in Egypt. I was not struck off the strength of Egypt Signals until I'd finally been posted to Old Ushat and qualified and as a formal signals.
But really, for the last 2 years, you're in Britain?
In Britain. So I could always say that 5 years ago, I didn't have. Mind you, I went out again after the war. I went back to Egypt in 47. I was originally posted to Egypt. When I got there, I was diverted and sent up to Palestine, which I didn't take too kindly to. But as regards my first tour, it was 3 years.
Why didn't you take kindly to being posted to Palestine?
All the troubles on there. All the Jew and Arab and trouble up in Palestine. Why did I want to go there for? Especially when there was no accommodation for families. The families had been evacuated from Palestine at that particular time. Which meant to say I couldn't bring my wife out, whereas if I stayed in Egypt, I could have done.
Was it dangerous in Palestine at that time?
Oh, yes, yes. The sort of thing that used to happen was you get shot at now and again. There were a few bombs slung at you. Somewhat similar to Northern Ireland, but not as bad.
Did you get shot at yourself?
One occasion.
Can you describe what happened?
I remember talking about Egypt.
Well, we can do this as well.
We were down on... they blew up the... At that particular time, there was a sort of... Arabs were trying to isolate the Jews in Jerusalem. And they blew up the road. They cratered the road so as to stop the convoys. Jerusalem, to all intents and purposes, at that particular time, was under siege, and we were trying to keep the roads open. But in this particular occasion, they blew up and cratered the road. And in blowing up the road, they blew up our cables. Now, I was a lines officer, so we nipped down with a lines party to repair this particular place. Now, they thought we'd come down to repair the road. They thought we were engineers. This is my reading of it. And they opened fire on us from a house nearby, and we just had a call for assistance. We had a call for the armored cars to come up and sort of put the fire down, get rid of them, so as we could get back and get on with the job.
Was anybody hit?
No. We all lay very close to the ground because we were in the crater. Straight down in the crater, we tapped onto a pair in a cable, which went back to Jerusalem, got in touch with Jerusalem, and explain the situation. And out came the armored cars to get rid of these people who were firing at us.
How long were you waiting for the armored cars?
I suppose we were down there about 2 to 3 hours. That's all.
Did you have arms yourself?
Yes, so we always had carried arms. I carried a revolver. And the troops were armed with Sten guns.
Did you use them in reply?
No. You couldn't see anybody to fire at. And the best answer is keep your head down.
Coming back to Egypt before the war, were you sorry to leave Egypt, or were you glad to get out?
Mixed feelings. Taken by and large, I enjoyed my stay in Egypt. I was quite interested in sport, and the facilities or the availability of sport there was very, very good. Because as I said before, we had nothing at all was laid on in the way they do now. Our welfare services were minimal. And we used to find one of most of the way people used to find their entertainment in sport. We used to normally break golf round about 1 o'clock after our morning's work, and then have a meal, and then have a sort of siesta. And then we used to play sport from 3 past 3 onwards. There's one particular thing about this place we used to live in. You used to wait accommodation just now. The 7 plagues of Egypt, we had them. We had flies, we had bugs. Can I talk about bugs? Our barrack was absolutely riddled with them. And we had mosquito nets, or sand fly nets, which is the round thing where the mess come down over your bed. You wake up in the morning and feel them scurrying up the netting. And as a result of that, every Thursday, we used to have a full day home. And we were supposed to take our beds out, take them all to pieces, and burn them out with blow lamps to kill the bugs.
Did it work?
No, we never got rid of them. And even in Cairo Military Hospital, when I was in there, they were infested with bugs. Absolutely infested. And everything in the world you tried to do, never got rid of them. This is a bad side of soldiering, isn't it?
What were the other 6 plagues of Egypt?
Flies, obviously. But I say 6 plagues only because of the flies. Don't matter where you went in Egypt, you got in the desert. Anybody who served the desert will tell you, in 5 minutes you've got clouds of flies there. Where they come from, the good of Lord alone only knows. They don't go along with you, they just appear. So we used to say the 7 plagues.
Could you do anything about getting rid of the flies?
Well, normal precautions. Make sure that any food, etc., was thrown away and protected and put in cans and all that sort of business. Any sort of pools of water laying around were cleared up. Any normal actions you take in this particular country to stop attracting flies, etc., all that used to be done. This is the things that we were more or less taught. They were very strict on it. We were very clean. We had to be. Our barrack rooms, etc., were spotless. Our tables were scrubbed up, and our barrack room equipment was very, very limited. I can assure you that. But it was very clean. It had to be clean.
Did you ever think it was odd that you as British troops should be in Egypt, or did you just take it as natural?
I think we took it as part of our job. It's what we joined the army for. And as far as we were concerned, we were sent out there, and we didn't even consider ourselves an army occupation. We thought, well, we were wanted there, and that was that. I can't remember we felt anything other than that.
Did you think that the British presence in Egypt was a good thing or not, whilst you were there? Or did you not think of it at all?
I should have thought myself that I didn't really think much about it. I was young at that time, you know. And I did not reach the stage where I sort of spent a great deal of time thinking about these things. I was involved in other things and kept my mind fully occupied. And again, I was a tradesman. I was being trained in all that sort of business. So I don't really know whether they did really have a good influence or not. From later years, I would say yes, they did. I think we had a stabilising influence. And not only that, we provided a colossal amount of work for Egyptians. not only in Cairo, but down in the canal zone when we moved there. And we built up water towers and things like that for them. So I feel myself that we did good in Egypt. And as regards being a stabilising, I'm damn sure we were.